All right, if you guys want to go ahead and take a seat whenever you're in a good spot.
All right, butts in chairs.
Butts in chairs.
Butts in chairs.
Butterscotch
shenanigans. All right, you guys, welcome to episode 174 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm usually second, but it feels like I should get... This is very confusing.
I'm Sam, and I'm just kind of confused today about the situation.
The thing is, we had to sit in box art order, so it's a real weird thing. Also, this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. We're going to hit a lot of topics today. It's going to get weird. And we've never done this live before, so no guarantees on what's about to happen. Okay. This is October 2018, and we are coming at you live from Butterscotch Shenanicon here. Yes.
Sounds good.
Yeah, these microphones are really good, though, so we probably didn't pick up
any of that. I want to first say thank you all for coming. We have talked to people who have come from Texas, Florida, even an hour away. It's just been... we were kind of questioning, like, when we were deciding to put this event on, we were like, I don't know. I don't know if people... we'll want to see our faces, and you guys delivered, and we appreciate that tremendously. This is amazing. So
thank
you all very much. It's a little bit emotional. So, we'd also like to thank our recurring podcast supporters from moneygrab.bscotch.net.
That's where we grab your money.
And we have a new supporter from this week who is here. This is Sen O'Lear. Are you where? Raise it. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Sinalier says, one coffee for everyone in the BS crew. Also, roughly the monthly cost of the online games you convinced me to give up and actually pursue game dev with that spare time. It's the least I can do.
Thanks.
You could probably do more, you know. But
he did say it was the least.
That's true. That's what that literally means.
Yeah. So it's very honest.
But we appreciate it. It's fantastic. We also have other recurring supporters, so thank you guys very much for keeping the podcast alive and letting us do this, whatever this thing is. Yeah. So for this episode, we're going to skip the news, skip the life stuff. We're going to go right into questions. We sent out an email to all the Shenanicon attendees to gather questions from the audience so we could pre-screen them, because we don't know what you guys have been getting into. We don't know
where you come from. I don't know what you're about.
So we decided to pre-screen these questions, and we have, I think, who has questions? Give it to them. Okay. So we printed out your questions, gave them back to you so that you can read them if you would like. And if you don't want to read it, then when we call you out, then just shake your head and just look like really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. So get red
sign.
In the face, sweat if you need to. We'll figure it out, and then we'll go from there. We'll
read it for you. It'll be fine.
Yeah. All right, so first question comes from Isaac.
Yeah, Isaac. This is the first live podcast question ever.
Ever.
Isaac, also known as Angry Muffin, who is a moderator who's been with us for a while. So thank you.
This is one of the people who we're always thanking at the end of the podcast.
Yeah,
when we're rambling. True. So thank you, sir, for your service.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right, you got to get a little closer.
Get up in that mic.
Get up in there.
Get your face on it.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I decided to ask kind of a weird one. If moonlight is actually sunlight reflecting off the moon's surface, which we all know it actually is.
Yes.
Why does it not kill vampires?
Right. This is a great question. Great. All right. Thank you, sir.
I like that we're starting off with the hardest hitting questions I think we've ever received.
Yeah, we got to go deep on this.
And it's square in our wheelhouse of game development, life improvement,
and vampires.
So the question is,
if moonlight is simply sunlight reflecting from the moon, why does this not affect vampires?
Okay. Well, we got to first clarify which vampires we're talking about. Are we in the Twilight?
Are we I Am Legend vampires?
Yes.
Are we...
What sort of flavor of vampire are we talking about? Because we know that some vampires just sparkle when they are struck by
gorgeously, I might add.
Maybe gorgeously. Sparkling is actually just a very slow form of decay.
It could be.
You know? So maybe it actually is very slowly murdering them.
But they also look great.
Yeah, they just look great while it happens.
Isn't it just how the sun normally works for us?
I mean, yes. Yes, that is true. Yeah.
So they're just regular
people. They're just regular folks who reflect light a little bit.
Yeah, because I guess a similar question would be, why don't we get sunburnt by the moon?
Can you get a moonburn?
Can you get a moonburn?
Yeah.
If you're out, you know, at a pagan ceremony for like the whole night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dancing around a bonfire. Yep. Can you be somewhat
moonburnt?
Moonburned in the morning.
Yeah.
Great questions. I don't know if we can get I don't know. But I think we also need to maybe take a step back.
Okay.
We need to think about the mythology around the moon generally, and maybe we can work our way back, you know, to figuring this out.
Okay, I'm on this train with you. Let's go.
Okay. So, werewolves.
Yes.
They are affected by the moon.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. But only when it's full.
Perhaps is this a measure of the total moonbeam, the moonlight?
You would think it's quantity based, and I'm with you. Okay. But I think there's something happening on the moon that's doing something to its light. Okay.
Okay.
So we got vampires. They can hang out on the moon. It's fine. Whatever's hitting that moon, bouncing off, it mitigates the sun, right? Regular wolves are fine. Werewolves have the opposite effect. Okay. The light hits the moon. Something happens to it.
That's true.
And now it triggers something, you know, primal within them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't think it's about quantities. I think it's about
the moon. So what is the moon? What's the moon made of?
It's cheese, right?
Cheese. Yeah. Okay. Everyone knows
this is a lactose problem.
And we know
that's what it is.
Because dogs love cheese.
Dogs love cheese.
Vampires are probably mostly indifferent, I guess, because they just like blood.
People love cheese.
Well, if the moonlight is actually cheese light,
there might be a garlic situation as well.
We have a garlic cheese moon, which reflects light and infuses it.
So what you're saying is lactose is being reflected off of the moon.
Yes.
Yeah.
In staggering quantities.
Stirring something lustful in a wolf, in a werewolf.
The lust for cheese, which is what gets them going.
But it just takes a certain threshold before they really like.
Yeah, it's why you need a full dish of the moon to get that.
And I think
really
similarly,
good garlicky flavor.
Yeah, and I think similarly, if you've got a block of cheese sitting on a table, sunlight comes in from the window, hits the cheese, reflects onto a vampire. Nothing happens.
No, that's a good
Nothing
point.
Happens. Yep.
That's true. I've never seen that before ever. Yeah.
So, did we get it? I think we got it. Okay. Thank you very much, Isaac. Okay. We've all learned a lot. Next question comes from Senolier Dan.
All right. So I asked. Wait.
Before you get started, Dan sent us a novel. We had to send it back and reject it.
Is roughly 10% of the question.
Yes. he courageously trimmed it down.
I think your question is super interesting. Could you summarize it for me? As I think the email I got back. here's a condensed version of what I asked.
Can you tweet it at us? Yeah.
Given the recent shutdown of the Apple affiliate program, do you think indie should be doing anything different now to get their initial press coverage? Would you say that this struggle is any easier when launching on Steam, the rest of the process notwithstanding? Or does that audience still expect too much in terms of scope to be a good platform for an indie studio's first few offerings?
Okay.
So we got to back this up for everybody in the room. Number one.
Some context.
Apple. You familiar with it? It's a large company.
Have you heard of Apple?
It's worth approximately a lot of money these days. Okay.
It's
so,
worth our current fiscal debt, I believe.
Yes.
So
it's an entire country by itself. Apple had what was called an affiliate program for games. So essentially what that meant is if someone linked to your store page via the affiliate program and then bought the game, then actually the affiliate, the person who linked them there, got a tiny bit of the cut of the actual game purchase. And what this allowed for was essentially press sites to cover mobile games and actually get paid by pushing people to buy those games. So you do a review, put a link up, people go buy it from there, and you get some money at the end of the day. This, they've been slowly reducing it. And then this year they just were like, yeah, we're done, and removed it. Which, if any of you are sort of familiar with the goings-ons of the internet, a lot of the ad-based revenue has been just disappearing because everyone's got ad block and things like that. So this left a bunch of these smaller indie sites in the lurch where maybe they were able to generate a little bit of revenue from covering little games like ours, but now they probably couldn't. So that's that context.
But it also left even some of the larger sites in a really rough spot because they got a significant fraction of their income from this. And so now if they have no incentive to be trying to drive traffic specifically to the store, that incentive has been taken away, right? So now it means that who's got our back now when we go launch a game?
Yeah. So Seth had mentioned in our earlier little presentation that one of our first games got coverage in this little magazine online called GameZebo, which is the first article we'd ever gotten. And they pointed to Gerblins, which was free. So I don't know how they were ever making any money off it, but they did that for us, which was nice. And so the big question basically becomes, in the case of how the industry looks now, so if you're an independent developer and you're about to launch a game, what does that mean for you? Because essentially it's now even less in the interest of the press to cover your game. It's already very hard to cover all the games. So again, for those unfamiliar, there's more than like 1,000 games hitting the mobile stores every week.
Every
day. Yeah. And then
7,000 a week or so.
Yeah. As far as the PC market, because Steam has sort of stepped back and just said, hey, put it on here, whatever it is. There's now approaching, you know, a very high number of games coming out every week on Steam as well, which I believe is in a couple hundred a week now.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have this flood problem, which means that getting press was already hard and weird, and now it's even harder and even weirder.
Yes.
So all of that context to go back to the question, which was essentially, what does this mean for someone trying to launch an indie game now? Is it a good idea to try to launch on Steam, given sort of the scope of what maybe a smaller team or even you as a solo person could do?
So I'm gonna put on my nihilism pants, and I'm going to say probably not much. Probably doesn't mean much. What we found is that the platforms themselves tend to be people call them gatekeepers, which is true. I mean, they get to decide who gets to be on their platforms, but in a more sort of deeper sense, they get to decide which games succeed. And so how many people here played Flop Rocket? Okay. And how many of you guys found Flop Rocket on the front page of the App Store? Yeah. Okay. So this is one of those things where you need to get the backing of the platform before they show your game to anybody. And then you have extraneous things that happen kind of after that. So we have, for example, our moderator, Angry Muffin here. He found Flop Rocket because his brother found Flop Rocket because he happened to have some downtime on the day that we published it. And it was featured on the front page of iTunes. And so anybody who booted up their phone that day, they were just hit in the face, or that week, sorry, we're just hit with our big Flop Rocket box art. So that's the kind of thing that truly matters. And so the question we've always been kind of struggling with is, how do we take advantage of, I hate to say it, Twitter? How do we take advantage of social media, press, things like Twitch, things like YouTube, all these things collectively in order to get that one thing to happen, just to get the press to feature the game? So I think the question is like, will this Apple affiliate thing actually put a dent in your capacity to do that?
I think it won't, because I think it never actually helped developers that much anyway.
So to back this up, Adam is a PhD in molecular biology, also loves statistics, and has done a bunch of research for us using Steam Spy data that's available on the web to crunch down and sort of understand what actually happens on these storefronts when things like sales happen or press happen.
Which doesn't mean I know anything, but I did do all of those things.
You know, slightly more than most of us do.
But if you just look at the sheer scale, any of these, even the really big websites like Touch Arcade and others, they get a lot of traffic and they drive a lot of traffic to a store. But the amount of traffic that you need to launch a title that can pay you, because you're launching games, you know, on mobile in particular, at like a few bucks at most, right? And so think of the number of people who have to buy that game for you to pay yourself for all the labor that you put into making that thing. It's a lot. There is no website with or without an affiliate program that could drive enough traffic to actually pay you for the work that you put
in. I mean, each of the controllers at these demo stations, that's like 3 copies of Crashlands right there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. We basically measure things in copies of Crashlands, right? Yeah. I mean, this event costs some number of copies of Crashlands.
Yeah.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot of sales to actually do that. And basically as far as we can tell, just the thing that matters more than anything else is getting the attention of the platform holders and getting on the front page. Because if you can't, you only rely on these, like this broad network of these little sort of webs that are all shooting into your application. But the power just isn't that strong.
Right. So then the question that Sinolier was asking was basically, does this, so getting the attention of the platforms, there's ways that you can do it. And one of those ways is maybe by getting really a really good wave of press coverage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then kind of the core question.
So it won't directly sell games.
Right.
But
correct.
Might attract some.
But if, yeah, but if you get a whole bunch of really great articles about your game, then maybe you can get the attention of the platform and then they might feature your game at that point. So will this Apple affiliate program plug pull, will nice. This will this make that harder?
And I think no.
Okay.
Because again, like so all these websites, they built an audience. You know, so Touch Arcade has a huge audience of people who come there day after day to learn about mobile games coming out.
Yes.
So Touch Arcade can't just suddenly say, oh, we're going to not do this because we don't get paid to do it. Because they do, actually. They get paid. All their ad revenue comes from them telling their fans about games that are coming out. And so...
So it's, still in, their, it's actually, still in their interest.
Yeah,
so
it's talk still in their interest. And yeah, this is really actually yeah. why it sucks for everybody else besides developers. This is why it sucks for press. Because now all of a sudden they have to keep doing the job that they were already doing and not get compensated for it.
Which is crazy. But also,
they're getting squeezed real bad.
In our own experience with Crashlands, none of the press we got before getting the attention of the App Store, we really got to use to get the attention of the App Store. So I actually just trolled LinkedIn for like 2 weeks until I found what looked like a guy inside of Apple. And then I just sent him some LinkedIn messages. And I was like, hey, look at my game. My brothers and I are building this game. It's really good. And then 2 weeks later...
But, well, the dumb part is we were reaching out to try to promote Crashlands, and then he went to our website, and he was like, what about Flop Rocket?
We're like, that's well, why I mean, we got the Flop Rocket feature.
Yeah. We were like, yeah, that's a thing, too. But who cares?
But who cares about
like,
that?
Yeah, but he said, I care, and then they featured it. So we didn't – it had nothing to do with press.
Right.
Yeah, it's very messy. The whole process is incredibly messy. A lot of times it's also about who you know. So going to conventions, going to things like Game Developers Conference, and just trying to meet people – but not even in a business way, just in a meeting people as humans and just like talking to them and hanging out and having a cup of coffee and not trying to like push your product, you know, onto them, but just getting to know them because that would be one of the bright spots of them at, or for them at the convention is getting to just hang out with you and just in the midst of all the chaos that they're putting up with, just hanging out with somebody who just chats with them and just wants to hear what's going on with them. Right.
Yeah, so speaking to this, I mean, like a big part of our strategy has been to essentially try to go tardigrade mode, which is essentially become a tardigrade, which is
yes, no,
tiny,
a tardigrade is
it's a water bear. Okay. Yeah. It's a tiny creature that can basically exist everywhere. It can exist in space, I believe. And then you can take it out of the vacuum of space and just kind of heat it up, breathe on it. And it's like, I'm good. And so our whole goal is essentially to make it so that our studio can survive.
It's sort of like it's a Pokemon that only has Harden, I guess.
It's yeah.
Like
yeah.
A metapod.
It's a metapod.
Yeah. A tiny metapod.
Yeah. So that's been sort of our goal as far as how we set up the studio. And the reason is because we know that the time scale you're operating on when you just go to a conference, for example, and make friends with people is years. So actually, very good example of this. 2 days ago, we needed to get a translation of our store page in French for Crashlands. And just that morning, I had got an email from a guy who I had met, and he saw a presentation that we were in out in San Francisco this past week. Someone had a thing of Crashlands up, and he said, oh, it's nice seeing you at this conference. Ha, ha, ha. He happens to be a French dude. And so that later that afternoon, I said, oh, by the way, this seems like a nice cosmic thing. Could you please translate the store page for me? Because we don't know anybody else and you're our only hope. I met that guy 2 years ago. And since then, like I've gotten lunch with him twice at GDC or at some other events and just kind of been hanging out. But otherwise, there's no actual agenda in place for any of that because there can't really be. So the one downside of this is that you have to structure your activities and your company around just surviving. Because you actually can't pull the value out of all of these networking things until years down the road.
And it's mostly unplanned. It's
just, you got to survive long enough to take this shotgun approach of networking, make friends, just get in, you know. And we also love doing things like this, you know, where we do like give talks and things like that, where we can make both. It's good for us because of course it puts us in front of a crowd, which is always good, you know, publicity. People see you, but also it allows us a really easy way to then talk to people. Because after you give a talk or you're on a panel or something, then people will come up afterwards and they'll just want to chat about stuff. And so this is why we angle for giving talks at GDC and things like that as well. So those things, of course, are much more expensive than just having a cup of coffee with somebody in terms of time investment. But
so long way to answer the question, but
that's how we do.
It's the only way we know.
Okay. Next question comes from Devin.
All right. I am a music guy, so my question is about music.
Cool.
How did you get connected with Fat Bard? Hi, Patrick. did you intentionally choose a music studio that was from your guys' area? And could you talk about like some of the importance of music and sound effects in your games and maybe any interesting ways that you guys like to implement them?
Cool.
So I think this comes right back to what we were just talking about.
Yes, 100%.
All right. So the music for Towel Fight to the Monocle of Destiny and Quadrupus Rampage, that music was composed by a guy who I met while I was in law school, right before I dropped out of law school to make video games. He is now a lawyer, but he always wanted to make music for games. And so while I was trying to learn how to program, I kept roping him into my projects and being like, could you write a weird, you know, like fat beat orchestra piece or something for this?
It's a common request.
Yeah,
fat beat orchestra piece.
Just for this horrifying monstrosity of a prototype that I put together. I feel like the one thing
he needs that timpani
that would really set it apart is this music. So I met this guy. Moved on to, like, we worked in another studio for a while. We started making our own games, and it had been a couple years since I had been in law school with this guy. But I just reached out to him, and I was like, hey, you know how I kept making you make music for bad stuff that I was working on? I have slightly better things now, and we still need music. And so we contracted him for that. And again, it's just those random happenstance things. But when it comes to Fat Bard, he was on the prowl. So he started coming to all the game dev events in St. Louis.
He goes to GDC and meets every game developer he can find.
Yeah. And you know, he himself will tell you that, you know, almost every time it doesn't pan out, you know, because you'll meet somebody and they don't need music for their game. You know, they don't need what it is that you can provide. But that doesn't mean you can't become their friend, you know, just get to know people who you feel like are doing really cool and interesting things. And over time, those things start to pile up, and then coincidences happen because you've orchestrated that to be the case. So it was actually the case that the guy who did the music for Quadrupus and Towel Fight was originally making the music for Crashlands. Mm-hmm. And he composed several songs, but as a lawyer, he was
running out of time.
And he just couldn't keep it up. And so Fat Bard showed up at a game dev event, and just at that moment, we needed music. So that was pretty much it.
We were like, you seem like trustworthy. You've got a beer in your hand, I guess. We're meeting with our faces. This is fine.
Yeah. So we didn't go out of our way to sort of meet somebody local. But I think that does kind of speak to the I think it's really hard for game developers because how many people here would consider themselves an introvert? Yeah. A lot of hands. And I feel the same way. You know, I can get up here and I can do this, and tomorrow I'm going to be laying down moaning for like 12 hours. because like a lot of you probably, you know, I need to recharge and kind of just like be away from the chaos of a crowd, you know. And that's true of a lot of people. I think a lot of people get into games, into making games, because they liked to play games. And they liked to play games because, man, people are exhausting sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, like sometimes you need to just like go into your phone and just like hit some fish with another fish or something. Mm-hmm. And so I think we get a lot more introverts in game development than maybe in other fields. And so this idea of getting out there like that is maybe, I don't know, maybe horror inducing.
Yeah. Maybe that's really what it's all about though. Cause I mean, most of the music people we know, actually, that's how they've gotten all their gigs too. I mean,
so how would you do it?
How do you get out there?
I know we all are. We often talk about how important it is to get in there.
But how do you get out there?
In this case, you might also need to get out there.
So I think, so you'll notice I've talked to most people here already, and I probably asked each person a similar set of questions. And that's because I thought about it a little bit before I came, and I was like, what would be some good questions I could ask that are commonly going to be interestingly answered by the people arriving here today? It was just like 2 minutes as I was sort of on my way over here. I was like, where'd you come from? That's a good question. And that's usually valid at every single conference or any other event you'll ever be at. And then as far as like local stuff, if you are working locally, you can say, oh, you know, where do you work local? What neighborhood are you in? You know, what do you do? And so I think just coming with basically a list of sort of prepared ideas about how you want to take a conversation can be a really easy way to just get it going. Because I feel like that's usually the hard part. Most of us, once we're in it, you're in it and you're kind of going, it's fine. It's always, at least for me, has always been the starting point has been difficult. So if I'm doing a tiny bit of thought work ahead of time and just saying, okay, you know, I'm going to this particular event, people coming here are probably looking at this from this particular angle. What might be an interesting question to ask?
Is this, just think about it like a math problem.
Yeah,
you know? it's just, you just need to find the formula. And I've also found that the one thing that most people are sort of insecure about in these kinds of events is that nobody cares about them. That, you know, they're going to come to a big crowded party and they're going to be standing there off in the corner with nobody to talk to, and that they're going to leave kind of sad, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have this inherent fear that we're not going to be noticed. And so, you know, be that person that, that you just go up to somebody and just ask like these, you know, start with these generic questions and just ask them stuff. If they answer with about something, then just ask about that thing, you know, because
people love talking about themselves
as you can see. People want to be heard. They want to know that somebody else cares about what they have to say. And literally all that takes is questions. Yeah. Just ask.
I think I'm probably the worst at it of all three of us here, but my strategy is to get over an initial hump, because then I'm forced into the situation where I have to talk now, which is to make eye contact, stick my hand out and say, "Hi, I'm Adam."
And then inside you're screaming the whole time.
The whole time. But now I've overcome that thing, and now the person's looking at, like, now there's an expectation, you know, that I have to continue.
You're in it.
I'm in it. You know?
You got in there.
Yeah. So I can't just go run away because that's too weird.
It's more like jumping in a pool.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
It's gonna be cold.
Throw your body.
You
in
need
and it'll
some
take care
way
of
to rip the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yep.
It's hard.
It is hard. It is hard.
As far as going back to the music question, so as far as actually putting those sound effects into our games and weird stuff we've done, I don't think we've actually done too much weird stuff on the actual like implementation side, I guess.
Yeah, we've done some weird stuff.
What do we do?
Yeah, we've got all kinds of weird Doppler effect things that we're playing around with now, where we can like whip something across the screen and hear like, "Beow," you know, as it goes past. And we have all these mechanics that we're creating, and it's a lot of fun because we get to then keep reusing those. Like one of the things you may notice in a game like Flop Rocket is you pick up a series of coins and it's like, you know, it kind of works its way up. Kind of losing my voice a little bit, but it kind of works its way up in pitch. And that's like a nice little satisfying jingle that you kind of keep hearing over and over again, which also kills the monotony of hearing the same. You know, if you go back and you play an older, like an original Mario game or something, man, those coin sounds really start to hit you
after
a while.
So we just ruined that for you because you didn't notice, but
now you cannot unhear it. And so a lot of the work that we do on the programming side is then, you know, these kinds of things are a specific implementation the first time, you know, we got to hand code that. But then once we create a system out of that, then we just have that toy that we can kind of play around with. And so, developing things where we can queue up playlists was a fun thing we got to do for Levelhead, where we can like put a bunch of different songs and then it'll, you know, like shuffle them around. And we get all that great stuff.
I think the weirdest stuff comes from just how the effects are made.
Yes.
So many of the sound effects and Crashlands of the creatures and stuff is Patrick screaming or gurgling into tubes, you know, just like really weird stuff.
The Glazer, which is a laser shooting,
it's like an elk
gazelle sort of a thing.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So when you encounter this creature and it gets mad at you, it's kind of got this like weird noise.
It was pretty good.
Well, we got the sound effects and we listened to them before we put them in and sort of give any feedback. We got the sound effect and we're like, what is
how did you
is this
do
an
this?
Animal?
Where did you find?
And Patrick was like, "Well, I just took a paper towel tube and held it up and I just went and then pitched it weird inside of a software."
Well, then also we mentioned Gerblins was one of our first titles, which Sam did the audio for, and he almost threw up because of the sound.
I was making a bunch of like these blah, blah, sort of weird noises, and I went too hard on one of them,
that's where the best sounds come.
Yeah,
they were good.
You went in there too hard. You know, sometimes you can do that. So, but the other fun thing about it is actually the trailers. So, because Fat Bart does our trailer audio as well and our voiceover. So,
well, you do the voiceover for the trailer.
Wait, I do the voiceover, but he has recorded and listened to me scream a bunch, and so do you. So, actually, this week we went over to record the audio for this one. We literally baked this trailer yesterday. Made it on Tuesday through Thursday this week.
This trailer was finished yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one that you guys just saw that we can't say anything more about on the podcast.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, it's a secret.
But yeah, so
it was there.
So I go over there and then get to do the voiceover thing, which is super fun. And he's just sort of rapidly editing stuff. He's like a magician. He's rapidly editing stuff as we're going. And then afterward, you know, I'll put it all together in a trailer and then I send it to him. And I'm like, "Hey, just make this better than I did." and then he'll send back an audio track, which has sound effects in it. It has like a bunch of like the oohs and ahs that you heard in this one. All sorts of stuff that I didn't necessarily say we should do. He just sort of, you know, he clues in on it and then amplifies it a little bit using his own skills.
Well, and as the editor of the podcast, he also works that magic in. Every now and then we get those really bizarre intros to the podcast where there's like cool music going on. Like, we did not do that. We just sent it off to Patrick and we're like, do sounds on this. And then he does. And it, we don't have to think about it too hard, which is fantastic. All right. Next question comes from Devin. Oh, sorry. Willie. We just got Devin. You out of here, Devin. Willie. Is Willie here? All right. Willie. Yeah. Woo!
All right. So I have a serious question.
Ooh, okay. I'm ready.
Are you ready for this? I'm ready. How do you handle being business partners and family? I hear a lot that partnerships are a bad idea, but you seem to do well. Do you have any tips?
Partnerships in general or family partnerships?
Yes. Yeah, in general.
It's all just relationships, right? At the end of the day, that's the base level. I think for us as three brothers who've grown up together, the joke that I make a lot about it is that we got our punches out early, if you will. So we've technically been working together in some capacity since all of us sort of came on the scene, whether that was, you know, trying to negotiate who's going to get to play the Game Boy right now, or if that was building trebuchets like Adam did, or a huge bonfire, or, you know, going out and figuring out how to do our giant laundry list of chores for, you know, mowing yards and weeding things and all sorts of other things. So weirdly, we have this, it's familiarity, which is sort of the basis of a family idea, right? So I think that's actually the grounding for us in
it
most
just
of
now occurred to me. That family is the root word of familiar. That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting.
Crazy.
Did not realize that.
That's all it means. And that's why at some point you can choose your family in some ways, right? You find someone who is just either naturally very familiar to you, who feels familiar and good. And then you start building a relationship by just like hanging out and doing stuff together. So as far as how we handle it, I think
it's most about making everything explicit.
Yeah.
Not with I mean, profanity also, but
tons of profanity,
which does help. It lubes things up a little
just
bit.
Just swearing constantly.
But you know, it's just making sure that everyone has assumptions all the time about what's going on with other people. And you just like, we basically have running monologues in our brains about everybody around us. We're like, this person must think this about me. This person must think this about X, whatever. The fact is you're just wrong about all of it. Like literally all of it.
Yeah, and you don't know me.
Exactly. And you don't know me, right?
Yeah.
And so the only way to know is to actually keep that stuff up out in the open. And this becomes a really big deal when it comes to business partnerships, because you are now deciding to align goals. You're joining souls and aligning goals, right?
Put that on a t-shirt.
Oh, man.
It's good.
And, get another one of those.
And so you have to know, like, what is everybody trying to get out of this partnership? And are you equal partners in this thing? Because as soon as it comes to work, just like at home chores, right? Nobody feels like their partner's putting in equal work. That's just true. And it's because everybody has different goals. You only see a subset of what the other person is doing. You see none of what they're thinking. And so you just have to be constantly, constantly asking and realigning yourselves, which is one of our core business goals. Actually, we have a list of 12 principles, which we really should have put in here. Actually,
I forgot about that poster.
Kind of in the air. I feel
it's fine. Yeah. But one of them is align thyself, and it's basically saying make sure that you are on the same boat, going in the same direction as everybody on your team, and make sure you're approaching it as a team. You just have to be aware that there are going to be asymmetries, and that's fine. There have to be. Everybody's got different skills. They've got different time available. They've got different everything. And so when you're coming into a project, you have to be aware of what those asymmetries are. And you have to be talking about it. You have to make sure that everybody's okay and on the same page.
Well, let me ask you this. Because do you feel like, maybe I think culturally, some cultures have an issue talking about money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially,
you got to talk about it.
Especially families. It makes people uncomfortable, right? Because in some cultures, people view their income or their money or their financial situation as a symbol of status or whatever. And I think especially in the United States, where we try to have a very egalitarian society where we try to say like every vote is equal, every person is equal.
It's supposed to be a meritocracy also in a lot of ways, right?
And so when you talk about things that people might view as stratifying, then people want to shy away from those kinds of conversations.
Well, we also have kind of a really detrimental desire to make sure that people aren't getting their unfair share, right? And
yes.
It always, so we have this like deep sense of unfairness anytime it feels like there's some asymmetry that we are not on the receipt, the good end of.
Right. And I think families may just have a bigger issue with this kind of thing in certain cases. where if you come from a place where people don't talk about money because of how upsetting or offensive it might be, and then you also definitely don't talk about that with your family, and then you want to start a business with that family, well, you got to talk about is the money. So, yeah, because I think it's probably the case that maybe people are much more comfortable talking with a complete stranger than somebody they're more intimate with about this kind of thing. So it really just depends on, like Adam said, about your goals, about where you're coming from. And I think there's also kind of back to that thing you're talking about with like not knowing a person's intent, which is there's a thing called the fundamental attribution error, which is the idea that like if you encounter somebody for the first time, like I was in New York City and I was trying to cross the street. I look both ways. Everything's fine. And I don't see anything. And all of a sudden, as I'm crossing the street, a woman on a bicycle going 378 miles per hour shoots past. And she starts screaming from a distance, "Heads up," which means nothing. So I'm like,
"Which way are you supposed to go? Do you like, stand
my,
still?
My
you
head is up, and I don't know what else I'm supposed to do." So she screams it again, and I just stop walking because I'm like, "I'm gonna die now." So I stop walking so that maybe she can kind of juke and get around me, right? And she does because I'm outside of the bike lane, so presumably I'm fine. But she still almost kills me. And as she's passing me, she just yells, "Jesus Christ!" I'm just being a person. But I heard that this was the only interaction I had with this person. Mm-hmm. And it might be the last one, I hope. But now the only data point I have about this person is that. Which is this person, A, has a reckless disregard for speed limits.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even on a bike, which is impressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah. They've probably killed a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And they're still weirdly accusatory about it, right? So
some of this is everybody else's fault.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the fundamental attribution error is this idea that like as an outside observer, I don't see that person wake up in the morning, kiss their spouse, go to work, cheerfully greet people, et cetera, et cetera. All I see is this little snippet. And now I've sort of cast it into this person who I think they truly are, kind of down in their core. And that one interaction is, it just defines that, right? And so with family, you got a lot more data points. Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot more of what that person is like, right? And so I think it does allow you to kind of get away from some of those interpersonal conflicts that come from assuming that just because you had a bad interaction with somebody, that means that person is just like that, or that's just a bad person, right?
Though you also, I mean, it's a screening thing, right? Because you also know the other way. Because if it actually has only been bad interactions for your entire life,
probably then you know.
Yeah. You know, don't you know go that you're right about
that person.
I think the other interesting thing about it is that it's largely about just keeping stuff out in the open. And in most cases, like essentially coaching one another on how to talk to one another. So just an easy example of this. So I'm not a person who takes feedback super easily, or rather I did not used to be a person who takes feedback super easily. You'd say something like, "Hey, this piece of art needs changing." And I'd be like, "How dare you challenge me?" And so
the classic move was Sam would make an art asset exactly one time.
Yes.
And if any of us said anything about it, like, "Oh, just could have a little bit."
Then we would get the look. I'd be like,
"That's fine. We'll just have that one art asset."
Basically over the course of years, we've had conversations about this, not only though from them, because I know this is a problem. I'm well aware of the fact that this is a bad way to operate.
As are we.
Yeah, as are they. Very keenly aware.
We all have demons that we're trying to murder.
In this case, not only did we have the conversation about like, "Hey, Sam, you should quit being such a piece of garbage about getting feedback like this," but also we had the conversation, "Hey, this is still me as I am right now. I'm a work in progress. So given that, I'm aware this is bad. To get this going, like, could you, when you talk to me about my art problem or whatever this issue is, can you approach it like this? So can you not just say like, 'Hey, this looks like a piece of garbage. How dare you try to put this in the game?' Could you just say, 'Hey, I think this is off because this is what we're trying to do and this doesn't quite hit it.'" That to me is just easier to sort of digest as a person who previously was sort of allergic to feedback.
Now you have a book recommendation for that, right?
Yeah. Thanks for the feedback is the book.
Very good. I recommend Metaphorgasm.
No, absolutely. Stop it. Absolutely not. No one will ever hear about that ever again.
So for those who don't know, Sam, he published a book in his teens, book of poetry. You can find it on Amazon.
You should not find it on Amazon.
He's been trying to escape its clutches for years.
Every time I'm close. But yeah, so I think there's a lot more of that give and take. And I think the really nice thing about family
as far as the partnership goes, one of the huge benefits is that you know that you're going to be near these people, but even if you're not working together, right? It's like you have a huge incentive to actually, you know, try to improve yourself, to try to improve the communication, because you know that even if it's the case that, you know, the company goes away and you guys all go do something else, you're still going to see them probably sometimes. And so what that means is you have a huge incentive to like really try to make that relationship good and try to make it work. So I think that's one of the huge benefits of being in a partnership like that, is because your familial partnerships are a little more locked in life, right?
Yes.
You don't really ask for them. You just have them. And that's kind of
how you got to put up with the bad stuff, yeah, and then get through to the good stuff. So is it a bad idea? I don't know.
Depends on the family.
Yeah, I think it's just the same as any relationship. It's just... is it a good relationship? But people view family differently than they view their other relationships. At their core, they can and should be the same thing. And if you can get rid of all the assumptions and actually just, you know, talk, you just got to talk about really uncomfortable, awkward stuff. You know, we had before we launched Crashlands, we had to sit down and ask, what happens if this game makes no money, right? We needed to know ahead of time, what do we all want to do? And it wasn't the same thing. We all didn't have the exact same desired things that we would do if we basically the game failed. And so we just had to sit down and talk about it, talk about how worried we were about this happening and what we were going to do if it happened. And then again, align ourselves so that we knew what was going to happen, which just required getting into it.
And we were also worried about what would happen if it did.
Yeah.
You know, because things can go the other way. You know, maybe you start a business venture with family, things go bananas. You're very successful.
It's like winning a lottery.
And you didn't really put down on paper who owned what. You know, and then all of a sudden you've got this weird kind of divisive a problem that you have to solve because you haven't talked about it. So
yeah, what things are business expenses? Who can make decisions about whatever? Like, does everything have to be a joint decision? All these kinds of things. Most people just feel weird about asking those questions and settling on stuff ahead of time.
I think you see the same thing with people starting businesses with friends. You know, they don't want to suggest that one of them might own more of the company than the other or any of that kind of thing. And oftentimes things just go unsaid. So you just need to, you know, what is that? Sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yep.
Or moonlight, depending on the
scenario. I think whether actually, but technically bleach is like real good at disinfecting things.
No. Don't be using that on anything. No. I don't know.
Depends on the relationship.
It depends. 100%.
Just talk.
Law school answer. All right. Next question comes from Brett Ward.
So this one's a little bit more for Adam. Probably,
sure.
But hit in me. Classic butterscotch form, you can put whatever twist on it you want.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Where do bots come from?
Where do bots come from?
All of the bots?
Generally, probably.
Just generally?
Just general bot.
Okay.
We talked about this a long time ago. Yes, thank you. That bots are
demons.
Demons.
Yes. Yeah. Bots are demons.
And so there was a prior episode where we talked about this, and so I guess, so we already know the answer, which is that bots are summoned
by robomancers. Yeah.
So that is my job title in the studio. But it's basically, I mean, it works in the same way that any magic system works, which is you take a bunch of archaic symbols,
mm-hmm. you get out your spell book,
you get out your spell book,
which is
you
write them Stack down, Overflow, I believe. Right, yeah.
And then you just write them in the correct order, right? And then just like with any spell book, that causes the bot to come into existence.
But it should be known that much like genies, bots are very mischievous.
They are.
They will try their best to not do what you actually want them to do, especially the first time you give it a go.
Yeah.
So we've had plenty of circumstances where bots have over or underperformed compared to what we had tried to get them to do.
When have they overperformed?
Wait, how many of you guys are in the Discord? The community Discord?
Okay.
Yes.
Half-ish? Okay.
So I would say that our juice box bot
is a good
This is a robot that Adam built in a couple hours?
About a day.
To live in our chat room and answer questions for people that they normally would pepper us with. So we don't have to answer them.
I would say that juice box definitely overperformed.
He's a very zealous performer.
On the question of whether or not Crashlands was coming to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Because literally anytime the word Crashlands and Switch were mentioned in the same post, the same sentence, basically, Juicebox got real mad about it and just laid
He'd be like, look, you guys, it's everywhere it needs to be.
Yeah.
Quit asking the devs.
Yeah. But this is the beauty of bots is because it's not us.
Yeah. It's not my fault. I mean, sure,
we didn't say anything. Yeah,
Juicebox is flying off the handle again, you know?
Yeah.
It's just mischievous.
Yeah. It's the same deal with multiplayer.
People mention
Crashlands and multiplayer in the same sentence. It's the same deal. It comes out. It's like, this is not going to happen.
Go away. Even if they just said something about playing Fortnite and then something about Crashlands. It's just, he'll attack. So I think we have had overzealous bots before. So you got to be very careful with, you know, with the runes that you put down.
I will say, as you know, if you're a game developer, if you're doing anything with community management or that kind of thing, having these demons around, even though they get up to some nonsense,
they get some mischief.
Having them around is fantastic because of that third party situation.
It's kind of like having a dog, right? Like you can just blame stuff on the dog.
Right. Yeah.
You're like, oh, whatever. I mean, sometimes I'm talking to my wife, I'll just look at the dog and I'll say something to my wife, but actually to the dog in a dog voice. I'd be like, oh, well, she's really getting really aggravated about this. Isn't she, Yogi? And then Yogi just looks at both of us and then
he doesn't know. Because, he doesn't know what's happening.
Because he's just a demon and we just get to sort of like play off his mischievousness, you know?
That's right.
Don't worry about it.
And this is a classic negotiating tool. You know, you go to buy a car. And the salesperson will be like, I need to go check with my manager.
Also known as a demon.
They go back to an empty office. They stare at a wall for 4 minutes. Then they come back out and they're like, I tried. I tried, but I can't budge on this price. My manager would just kill me. So by having this sort of non-interactable third party, I guess, taking care of some of the uncomfortable stuff for you, like smacking people down in Discord or negotiating business deals or whatever, you can have demons take care of that and people can't really...
Yeah, and then you couple that with not having enough time to update it. Because then when people say, this robot is really getting out of control, you just say, look, I got games to make.
Yeah, I don't have time. Yeah.
It's just going to be what it is.
You brought this demon into the world, but you can't take it out.
No.
You know, it's just there, it's doing its thing.
Yeah. It's tricky. There's a whole process.
They actually called them demons though instead of bots. Honestly, because like the whole Twitter problem would make a lot more sense. Like, there's a bunch of demons on my Twitter. They won't stop talking to me and throwing stuff around. Yeah, that'd make a lot more sense.
Demons getting into our elections, and I mean it's
crazy.
It's everywhere. It's a problem. All right, next question comes from Philip.
Yes, that was a good plosive.
Yes.
All right. If businesses were people, what would their lives look like? What would Butterscotch Shenanigans be like as a person?
Well, I think businesses are people, technically, according to the Legally. Supreme Court decision from a couple years
ago. Citizens United.
Yeah.
Businesses are people.
So as we know from that, if businesses were people, apparently they'd just be really mean to everybody all the time. one of those constant taking sort of relationships, I feel like.
Well, there's this whole sort of, you know, grow or die kind of ethos that person would have.
Mm-hmm.
As a company, so they
physically
would,
or like
I think physically,
just
well, there's no real reason, you know. So it's like growing for no reason, but as fast as possible, and then consuming all the resources around you so that somebody else can't get there and consume them first. So I guess it's like something that just really eats a lot.
Envy is also a big part of it. Yeah. Right? You're always looking at your competitors. Can't ever focus on your own products. You got to look over there. What do they do?
There's a thing. So there's a thing in business called a SWOT analysis. How many of you guys know about this? All right. Nice. Stands for
Nice.
Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. So you make this little
matrix.
It's SWOT.
Oh, it's SWOT. Okay, I was real confused.
There's no A.
SWOT
analysis. So you make this grid, and then you got to ask yourself based on my goals. What are my strengths internally? What can I do to achieve my goals? What are my weaknesses? Where where are my problems? What am I going to have sort of going on with my own stuff that's going to keep me from getting there? Then you've got your opportunities and your threats. So these are when you're looking at other businesses and you're like, how do I take them out? How do I take them down? And then you've got your opportunities, which is, are there, you know, new gaps in the market you can develop new products for, et cetera, right? So it's like internal versus external. Now, this is a common tool in, you know, business management and stuff like that. I feel like it's kind of weird if a person did that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. If you self-apply that.
What are my threats? What are my opportunities?
I can just get in there. Yeah, you just become like the worst person. But also who's very well aware of your faults. At least I hope so. But it kind of depends on, like, is it the intern doing this? Or is this, like, a person who's been at the company for 20 years? Because a lot of people probably don't actually do very good on the weaknesses portion, even in companies, about, like, actually establishing where their weaknesses are.
I think actually there's no real difference between a company and a person. Well, I mean, like, just even just like deeply, because
a company
is made up of a whole bunch of pseudo autonomous parts that don't really know what the other parts are doing, right? Like, just like a person.
Yeah.
Okay. So sure, maybe
like
this
a
company,
liver.
Like a sure,
for
yeah.
example.
So you know, yeah. maybe this company's doing a SWOT analysis. That's fine, but like, but a few people are doing that, and they're just making stuff up the whole time.
That's true.
Right? In the same way that we just go about the world making stuff up.
We don't know what's happening outside this room.
Yeah, we're constantly looking for threats. Yeah. We're constantly doing all this thing, all the exact same stuff. And in the end, we basically are doing a whole bunch of things, and we don't really know why. Mm-hmm. You know, companies have habits. They have people that are just filling out, like a form comes to you, you fill it out, you send it off. That causes somebody else to fill out a form, and now you just have triggered this cascade of
so
events.
You're saying kind of like how like vinegar flavored Doritos show up all of a sudden, and you're like, why did this need to happen? Right?
Yeah,
and it's because, you know, is it Pepsi that makes this? Whatever.
Lay's.
Does Pepsi make Doritos?
Somebody know? Somebody
that
know?
Can't be right.
Pepsi makes Doritos.
What?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they've got the Mountain Dew. They've got the whole market.
So why are they so upset about Coke? They got Doritos.
I don't know.
They need
to
relax.
But I think it's that, you know, as a company, you're like, well, we're here now. I mean, we're here now. So we might as well try some stuff, which is a lot like what being a person is, I feel.
That's
like.
True. You don't quite know why you're doing the things you're doing most of the time, but maybe sometimes you produce vinegar Doritos.
And you just find yourself. Just one big internal battle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With a whole bunch of mostly incongruent parts that are just like doing their best.
Yeah.
And then occasionally you do something cool.
So what if businesses were people? I think people are businesses.
It's all the same.
I think it's all the same. Yeah. So, all right, last question of the day comes from Kyle. Yes.
All right.
All right.
All right, Kyle.
The three of you are greeted by a game developing genie. Who grants you the ability to fire out any code, art assets, or robots and web tech that the three of you could ever possibly desire for the next 10 minutes. Mm. What game do you make? Go.
Well, I think we've already established that genies horrifyingly mischievous creatures at their core. So
yep.
is one of those, this is just a programming problem again. So how do you entrap this genie such that it actually makes the thing you want it to make? Because even when we try to make the things we want to make, we never end up making that. So as you probably just saw from the presentation. So, how do you approach this genie in the first place? I'm not even worried about what we're making.
No, I would run away immediately.
Yeah. Do not engage.
Do not engage with that genie. Like,
what does it even take to trigger the wish?
I hope you don't have to think it, because that's just...
Then you're already...
You're done.
Do you have to say, I wish that this, and then it waits, and it's like, maybe that was a period, so that's your wish now.
Right.
Or like, how does that
is
work?
Is a semicolon?
You got to end your sentence with a semicolon.
It's too complicated. you just can't trust what's going to happen. You can't predict how that relationship is going to go. So I would just leave.
Do not get involved with genius.
Yeah, we would have to...
Don't go messing around with genius.
We would just have to abandon the office.
Yeah, we'll be back in 10 minutes. We're on a coffee break. Do not follow us, demon. Yeah, I think that'd be exciting.
And we just have to keep on paying the bill just so that nobody else goes in there.
Okay. I think that's it. Don't touch genies. Mm-hmm. If you take nothing else away from the shenanigans, just get away from genies. All right, thank you all very much for attending the first ever live Coffee with Butterscotch episode. Thank you all for coming to Shenanicon as well. And we will see you guys next year.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, guys.